Find all your favorite movies and shows faster with Xfinity. Just speak into the X1 voice remote to search across live TV, on demand, even Netflix and Prime Video. Now that's simple, easy, awesome. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today. Restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone. This is Pam of Cafe con Pam, the bilingual podcast featuring fearless Latinas, Latinos, Latinx, and people of color that break barriers, change lives, and make this world a better place while living in the U.S. This episode is number 38, and after 2 long weeks of me trying to edit it and fix it, I'm just going to release it. It was really challenging. It was the first time I had recorded an episode with this new recorder that I received, that I just got, and I didn't know really how to use it. I'm not a sound engineer or anything like that, so I bought the recorder and I was like, let me use it for this recording, and it clearly didn't work well. So I also took a 2-week mini break from the podcast because I have family in town. And while I was dealing with this episode that was really hard for me to edit, I also had my family wanting to do things and it was overwhelming and I was just like, I can't. So I decided to not even post last week and not post anything about it because it was just too much. So if you are a first time listener, please note that not every episode has this, I want to say, poor sound quality. All the other episodes are better than this one. And if you are a regular listener, thank you so much for your patience and for understanding that life happens and sometimes we just have to roll with the punches. And for Maribel, who is our amazing guest for this episode, I'm so sorry. I promise I made this episode the best quality because I totally think that your story is worth it. And that's why I did not want to release it all crappy like it was. So you will hear a lot of background noise. You will hear when the door opens. You will hear when people are having a conversation behind us, and I promise you that I have educated myself to avoid this in the future because I'm getting a lot more requests from guests that want to record in open spaces like this. However, Maribel's story is so worth sharing that I could not skip this episode because of sound quality. So thank you so much again for bearing with me. Thank you for your patience. And here we go. Welcome to episode number 38 of Café con Pam. This episode, we have it at Carrera Café with Maribel Lara. For the past 7 years, Maribel has been helping Fortune 500 brands develop and execute marketing strategies that leverage social media and other emerging channels of communication. In her current role as part of the office of the CEO at VaynerMedia, Maribel and her 3 counterparts helped to scale CEO and founder of the agency, Gary Vaynerchuk. Again, Maribel is incredible. Her story is amazing. I met her a few months ago at Wheel Growth Summit, and we sat next to each other when we were on a ride. And I mean, me being the interviewer that I am, I asked questions and she was so open to tell me everything that happened. And I was like, oh my gosh, you have to come share your story because the way that you tell things gives anyone so much perspective. So if you are someone who's going through a hard time right now, if you are someone who's doubting that there's light at the end of the tunnel, definitely listen to this episode for sure. Because just having this conversation with her at that time, that day, at that coffee shop, gave me so much perspective to myself. So I definitely think that it will help you. And if you think that this episode is worth sharing to one of your friends, if you know someone who might benefit from this, please do. I mean, this is why I do what I do. So you can share it and we can spread ideas and move people together. So again, bear with me. Sometimes you won't be able to hear me as much because I was trying to reduce the noise, the background noise, and my voice is really high, I guess. So with the background noise, I'm not going to try to explain it. But sometimes I made it so you could hear her more than me sometimes, because I think what I say, you can pick up from what she's responding, and you hear me all the time. I wanted you to hear her. Thank you again, listeners, and here's the episode.
Sabrosura,
pati, que, que. Hola, Maribel.
Hola.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm so excited to be in California and to be reconnecting with you. It's been a few months now.
It's been. How many? Like 2 or 3?
Yeah.
And a lot of things have happened.
A lot of things I did. Yes, I am officially a Mrs.
Are you going to change your last name?
Nope. Okay. No, I'm almost 40, so changing my name at this point, I was like, that's too much. I can't. This is what I'm known as. This is who I am.
You've lived with it for so long.
I have. And we're also both like the last kid. So he's the last of his last name, and I'm the last of mine.
Are you going to have kids?
We don't think so. No. We're very much on the fence, but we can't even commit to a puppy. So that'll tell you where we are, where we are in that process. No, our conversation was actually whether or not he would take mine.
Really?
Because mine is 4 letters and his is really long.
Okay.
Yes.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, but let's start with your story.
Okay.
So what's your heritage, your ethnic background?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in New York City, where my parents met. So my mom came to this country in 1954. She was 12 years old. And she came from Peru. She came to Chelsea in New York City, which is
straight
where,
to New York.
Yeah, straight to New York and straight to the neighborhood that she lived in the rest of her life. She never lived in another neighborhood.
Wow.
So she was a New York kid and I was a New York kid. She met my dad in Chelsea. My dad was 19 when he came from Chile. And she met him about 3 days after he had arrived.
No way.
He was in the laundromat washing the one pair of like extra clothing that he had. And she was with her tia abuela. And her tia was, my tia abuela, her tia. And they were, her tia was like, he was with his best friend. He was a stowaway on a ship from Chile. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So you get where I stand on the whole immigration like conversation, probably just for me saying that. But so her tia was like, ¿Cuál de los dos te gusta? And she picked my dad. And she met him, but they didn't really, they ended up being in the same circles because the South American circle in New York City at the time was much smaller. My dad was a soccer player, and there wasn't a Chilean team at the time, so he ended up joining the Peruvian soccer team.
Interesting.
And my uncles, like my mom's cousins, were on that team, and so he became friends with her family and would essentially be at the same parties, and so they were in each other's spheres for a long time before they got together.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, like, how long was it before they got together?
Years.
Really?
Yes. My father apparently liked to play hard to get. And my mom used to tell the story that she basically was like, after years of sort of like pining over him, his brother was a big advocate for my mom and would like take my mom to parties to see my father. So they were trying to like plant her in his like presence. And then at one point she was like, forget it. I'm not playing this anymore. And she met somebody else. And the guy was also from Chile, funny enough. And he had said to my mom, I'm going to go to Chile, but when I come back, I'm going to propose to you. So she wasn't engaged, but she knew that there was a proposal coming.
Uh-oh.
The guy leaves. He goes back to Chile. And my father gets wind of the fact that, like, this other person, she's going to be gone. And he was like, oh, no, I need to move. She was like, he was like, uh-oh. So he ended up proposing, and they got married shortly thereafter.
Wow. Yeah. So that was his wake-up call.
Yeah. Like, it was his wake-up call of like, oh, she's not going to be there waiting for me forever.
She'll be there now.
And he finally sealed the deal. Very funny story.
Did you ever ask him why he waited so long?
No. She was 4 years older than him.
Okay.
Right? So when you think about the fact that, like, he was 19, to me it was also like, my dad didn't talk a lot, so there was never a whole lot of information. Like, you just sort of gathered the information. He was very, like, stoic. You knew he loved you, and that much he would tell you, but he didn't really like talking about his youth. And I think part of that is, like, he's a poor kid growing up in Chile. He was the second oldest of 9 kids. And there was a significant responsibility
for
that
sure.
came with being that. Like, you know, he would tell stories about, like, he didn't really live at home, right? He basically lived on the streets and tried to find ways to, like, make money and get stuff for the family. So there were stories about, like, stealing bread. Right, and like jumping on the newspaper trucks and stealing newspapers so they could go and sell them and like make a dime. There were stories about him being picked up and taken to the orphanage right? And then, like, running away from the orphanage and having to find your way back home. So, like, this, and you would get the glimpse of those stories, never in full detail, and, like, never talking about, like, his emotions. So, not surprising he wouldn't do that with my mom either. Right. But from what I know of my dad, like, he was 19 when he met her. She was 4 years older, and she had had all of these years in the United States.
Right.
Right? Like, this was, right. He was just starting out.
Right.
And so it made sense that he needed to, like, not just settle into being, right? In my experience, men take a little longer to settle into that. Like, it's not a generalization, just in my experience. But I think it was that and, like, just adjusting to a new country.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Can't imagine. And so you're the only child?
I'm one of two. I'm the youngest. My sister's 6 years older than I am.
And you've always lived in New York.
Always lived in New York. Actually, that's not true. That's a complete lie. I was born and raised in New York. I went to college in the Boston area. Yeah, okay. So technically, I lived in Boston for 4 years. I went back to New York for graduate school. I got a graduate degree in education. And then my first job in higher education is actually here in California.
Oh.
So I worked at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo for 3 years. I had this 10-month contract that was renewable for up to 3 years. So I still spent summers in New York, which is why it felt like I never left. But it was a great job, like a great first job in higher ed. And it was a good, I never planned on staying in California. I just wanted to be able to say that I had lived here. And I wanted to also rightfully say, like, I love New York and New York is for me.
Yes.
And I felt like it was dishonest to say that if I hadn't actually tried living in California.
Totally.
Yeah.
Would you move back to California?
No. I might. I love visiting. To me, San Luis is a beautiful town, and it's like the kind of place where I would consider retiring. But like at the end of the day, I love everything that I have at my fingertips in New York City. It's where my family is. Like, it's where my roots are. And I don't drive. I have never in my life had a driver's license.
So no way.
I lived out here for 3 years and never had a driver's license.
Did you take? Bus
and carpooling. Everybody carpools. Yeah. So you're just never the person that drives.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Why did you get into higher ed?
So I found myself heading into my senior year of college not knowing what I was going to do. I was a Spanish and Latin American studies major, and there's no clear career path coming out of that unless you're going to teach Spanish. And that wasn't what I wanted to do. When I considered at that time, like, what I had learned and where I had learned the most, it wasn't any particular class or subject. It was actually all the leadership stuff that I did on campus, right? Like, I was the house manager for the Latino Culture House. I founded a chapter of a Latina sorority on campus. I was vice president of that sorority. Eventually, I was, like, on our national board for the sorority while I was still in college, right?
Okay.
I did orientation. I did, like, all of these things, and that's where I felt like I learned how to be a grown-up.
Yeah.
And I learned responsibility. It wasn't going to classes, sadly, right? Like, I should have gotten more out of that.
That's the experience. That's what I remember from my college experience, is all the things that I was involved in.
Yeah.
Instead of the actual classes. I don't remember any classes.
Yeah, that was my experience up until that point. But I had no clue what I was going to do coming out of it, right? Like,
what was your undergrad?
Spanish and Latin.
Oh, Spanish, right? Yeah.
So everything happens for a reason. Yeah. And that summer, before my senior year, I met a sorority sister who had graduated, like, 5 years beforehand from Yale. And I met her in Texas, actually.
Wow.
I went to an event in Texas and, like, met up with her there. And connected with her immediately. And she had been working in college outreach. So she had been working for the University of Texas system. And she was planning on going back to graduate school to get a master's in higher ed administration. And I was like, what's that? Tell me more about that. And she was like, yeah, I want to work at the university. Like, I work for the university now, but I want to work at the university and I want to do multicultural affairs.
Okay.
And in order to get a job like that, she said they require a master's degree in education. And so she sort of sparked this thing in me that was like, wait, if the thing that I loved most about being in college and the thing that I learned the most from was actually all those activities, like, wouldn't it be great to be part of putting those activities together? And wouldn't it be great, like, I would love to be the mentor that I didn't necessarily have, right? Like, I think if I had mentors, don't get me wrong, But I think if I had had the right mentor at the beginning, my college experience would have been different. I wouldn't have struggled as much as I did. Right. Like my, I went through 100%. That. I went through the typical struggles of a first year student, plus the typical struggles of a Latina first year student. Right. I thought I was totally ready to be there. And boy, was I not. Right. Like, I didn't have anybody telling me that like an 8:30 a.m. math class was probably not the right thing to do. Right.
Right.
So I wanted to be that person.
Yeah.
Right. I was just like, I'm so like, I learned so much from this and I can help other people. And it felt right. And it was right, and it was right for a long time. Like, it was the perfect thing to do, and I got to help in a really great way. So the job at Cal Poly was awesome in that, like, I had a community that was mine from start to finish of a school year. So the first year, I had the 250 first-year students.
Wow.
And I was responsible for them, right? So, like, I knew what their grades were. And so, like, if they were on academic probation, I knew, and I was a resource. I was, like, a guidance counselor of sorts. I was a career counselor. Like, I was there when their parents weren't there.
Right.
During the hardest part of transition. And it was great. Right. I stayed for a second year because the first year was great. The second year, they were like, oh, you're doing a good job. Here's 600 students. And I was like, oh, wow. Totally different. And that was a really hard year. But again, like, what kept me there was, like, I saw that I was making a difference in people's lives. And it was incredibly draining. Because the other thing, like, residential life is, like, it is all of a person's life, right? So, like, if somebody ODs, if somebody is, like, suicidal, like, you know these things and you're having really hard conversations.
With them, yeah.
But I learned a lot. And the thing that I take away from that job is perspective, right? Like, even today, like, I have people who I manage ask me, like, how do you stay so calm? Right? I work in marketing.
Yeah.
Like, the crisis is we didn't launch a campaign in time, or like we missed the deadline to deliver this thing. Like, that's not actually a crisis.
Right.
Right? Like, right. It sucks, right. But that's not actually a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Right? No one's life is in danger.
Perspective.
And so I give thanks for that every day. Like, I know what a crisis really is, and I always have that.
Wow. That's awesome. That's a really good. I'm about to quote you right now. So you did that for 2 years.
I did that for 3 years.
Three.
Okay. And that was the max that you could do that role, which was smart because you'd probably be completely burned out after that. And the plan was always to come back to New York, and I came back to New York. And the timing happened at 6 months before I was due to come back. My dad got his first cancer diagnosis. And so it was just sort of that, like, you know what? The plan was always to come back. And it was like, yes, I'm supposed to come back, right? I'm supposed to come back, and I'm supposed to move in with my parents because I don't know what my dad's health will look like, but, like, I want to be as close to them as I can be. And so that's what it was. So I came back to New York. I got another higher ed job that time at Barnard College, and I was working in college activities there. Lived with my parents, like, my dad went through, like, 2 different bouts of cancer in back-to-back years, and was stable for a little while, but it was, like, something that we ended up having to revisit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how long did you do the other higher ed?
Another 3 years.
Another 3 years,
and that's where I was just, like, I sort of hit this roadblock of...
You got a promotion, right?
I did. So, it turned out that the director of our office left. And in her departure, I became acting director of the office and did the job for, I want to say, about 6 months and applied for the full-time job. And that was a whole other, like, set of politics where it really opened my eyes to
the bureaucracy
of, you know, that industry in particular, and probably most of them, right, where it's very much about, like, who you know and, like, it's unfortunate. I had been there 3 years. I was the one doing the job. There was something in my stomach that was like, this might not turn out the way that you think it's going to turn out. And so I was already prepared for that and sort of like in my head making my plans for what I would, like how, I really thought through like, how can this play out and what are you going to do? Rather than like waiting for it to happen, I was like, no.
Plan B.
Yeah. Like, have it and be ready to act. And I had the conversation with my parents who were like incredibly supportive, right? Like, for two people who, like, my mom was a stay-at-home mom, like, never educated beyond 8th grade. My dad never had any formal education. was a blue collar worker. I worked in the hotel industry, right? So like, there wasn't really like career advice they were going to give me. They had no idea what my path was, like what my skills were and like what else that could be applicable to. But what my dad did know was like, whether or not you were respected. And he was like, if they don't give you this job, then they don't respect you and you shouldn't stay there.
Wow. That's life advice. Like,
crazy, right? Yeah. Like, but it's so applicable. And it's that, like, sign of, like, you know, they get life. You don't have to understand. Like, there's still wisdom there of just having, like, lived in this world. And so I knew that if that happens, I had their support. And I mean, support, like, moral support, but also financial support. Because it meant that I wasn't going to be making any money, and I was going to be living under their roof, and they were going to have to feed me.
Was he sick at this point?
He was retired at that point, okay. Retired by disability. Like, he couldn't go back to work. My mom had long been retired from disability as well, so, like, they were living on, like, disability checks, but still were very willing to be like, you'll be fed, and you'll have a roof over your head, right. So, like, you'll be okay. And so, yeah, so it so happened that I was not offered the job, but I was...
Really?
And then the best part was, not best part, but the kicker was, I was told, like, you know, we're going to offer it to this other person, and we're going to need you to train her.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, I'm an angry crier, which is incredibly frustrating.
I am, too. And
right? Like, because you're, like, you want a person to know, like, I'm not sad, and I'm not weak. I'm really angry. And so these tears are not reflective of you hurting my feelings. It's that I want to, like, rip your head off right now, and I can't. So, and it just makes you cry more, right?
For
so that's, to be completely honest, like, that's what happened, right? Like, I cried in the person's office who delivered the news, and I asked questions. I still mustered up questions. And one of the questions I asked was, you know, like, what was the big determining, like, distinction? And it was like, well, you know, it's a hard job, and, like, you're going to have to make hard decisions, and we feel this other person is more capable.
But
and
you I was can like, train that person.
Right? And not only that, but it was just like, then you didn't actually read my recommendations or my resume, because I was a judicial officer for 3 years. Like, I removed people from housing. Right, like, I made decisions on people, like, I let go of staff, like, I have plenty of experience, like...
Right. You can do the job.
And so I realized it wasn't worth the debate, right? It was just a really clear communication in my regard that I wasn't appreciated.
Okay, that's it. I don't respect you.
Right. And so I went home that night and I shared the news with my parents. My dad was like, you know what you need to do.
Wow.
And I wrote up my letter of resignation that day, and I turned it in. I turned it in the next morning.
Oh, yeah. You gave them 2 weeks?
And I gave them 2 weeks, and I spent the next 2 weeks making sure that, like, everything that I touched, that the students who were affected by anything I touched were in good shape. In good shape. I felt like it was the right decision. And it, again, right, everything I honestly believe everything happens for a reason.
Me too.
You never pick the timing, but the timing happens when it's supposed to, right? Okay. So it was also a point when I look back now, it's like I wasn't really learning and growing in my role anymore.
Yeah.
And it was the wake-up call that I needed, and I was smart enough to realize that it wasn't just about looking for another job in this field, but I had the opportunity to assess long-term what it was that I wanted to be doing. And there were a few things going on. I was like, you know, what did I never consider? I was 29, and I was like, the last time I made this decision was like 8 years ago.
Right.
Right? Like, what's changed in 8 years? What have I learned about myself in 8 years? What am I good at? What did I never consider? And so I did, like, the skills assessment, like, personal assessment. I was like, I'm good at communication, right? I'm really good at talking to people. Essentially, what I do is I market programs to college students, and I'm good at it. But, like, can I go and get a job in marketing?
Yeah.
Probably not, because I've only ever worked in education for 8 years. So, I mean, the thing you do know about me is, like, I'm passionate about education, which is why I worked in ed for so long. And so I was just like, what if I went back to school for my MBA at 29 and start again? Like, take a business. I've never taken a business course in my life. Like, I have no idea. I was very scared about accounting and finance, but I was just like, but I need that, right? If I'm going to work in a business, if one day I want to, like, run my own business, like, I need that foundation. And I needed the confidence in myself to know that, like, I sort of needed to prove it to myself even more than I needed to prove it to a potential employer. I think I could have started from the ground up without an MBA and, like, worked my way up, but I needed to prove it to myself because that confidence would help me in selling myself. So I took for 6 months, I worked at another university, like part-time, so that I could study for the GMAT.
Okay.
Took the GMAT, did very well on the verbal, skated through the math, like, oh, barely. But I did it, right, sufficiently that I could get into a program. I applied to one program, so sometimes I'm overconfident.
One program.
I applied to one program in New York City because I didn't want to leave New York, right? I wanted to stay. And I didn't want to go on the whole ride. So I applied to the Honors MBA program at the Ziklin School of Business, which is part of Baruch College. And I got in. And so I was like, all right, this is the thing. This is what we're doing. And my dad was like, was diagnosed at terminal.
At that point?
Around that time, my dad was diagnosed as terminal. And he had been through two rounds of this. And he was like, I'm not doing chemo this time. He was like, I don't feel sick right now. I'm going to let this run its course. And we respected that. And I was like, Daddy, it's your life. Like, we're going to support you in whatever your decision. And I was like, I get it. For the fighter in my family, right? Just an incredible fighter. He was given 3 to 6 months if he didn't do chemo. He lived for 3 years.
Oh my gosh, they gave me chills.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so he was diagnosed terminal. I wanted, like, before, definitely, like, around the time that I left Barnard. Yeah, and he lived for, like, 3 more years.
So you went through the program.
So I went through the program. My dad passed away 8 months afterwards.
Wow.
After I finished my 6 months. Sorry, my math is all off. So I went into the program thinking, like, I have to make sure that I get a good job because I got to take care of my mom.
Now it's,
right?
Yeah.
Like, now it's me and my mom.
And you took care of your dad.
I did. Well, so life is funny. Was preparing for my dad, right? Like, had lots of time to prepare for my dad's passing and to think about, like, what's life like if it's me and my mom? So my sister was married, had a child, her husband was in the military, and they were living down south. So it was just me in the city. And we have a large extended family, but, like, it was always my direct family nucleus, right? So I always thought of things in terms of, like, it's me, my mom, and my dad. If dad passes, it's me and mom, and I gotta take care of her. And never felt that as a burden, like, that's just what it was,
what we did, right?
And then the life being funny and it turning the tables on you. A year before I started graduate school, or actually around the time I started graduate school, my mom was diagnosed with a rare form of breast cancer. It's a very odd tumor that grows very quickly, very aggressively, and in general not responsive to chemotherapy or radiation, right, which are the two ways that we know to fight cancer. So she ended up having to have a mastectomy, and she did radiation afterwards because it's the best bet, but we had no promises. So she would, you know, she had to keep up her updates and go for her checkups, like, on a regular basis. So she went through that, and then she was okay. And then the second year of my MBA program, around, it was, like, August, September, she was sort of, like, struggling with what seemed like a cough that wouldn't go away. Eventually, my dad was just like, all right, enough already. Like, let's go in for a chest x-ray. After the doctors, mind you, hadn't found anything, they finally did a chest x-ray. I went with her for the results, and it turned out that the tumor was back. And because she had had a mastectomy and her breast was no longer there, the tumor was growing on her lung and putting pressure on her heart.
And that's what she was coughing.
That's what she was coughing. I went in with her on a Tuesday for the diagnosis, and I could tell immediately, like, on the doctor's face, and it wasn't what we expected, right? We looked at each other, and it was like, holy fuck, yeah. Like, sorry. You know, like, not what we expected. So the other thing to know about my mom is my mom was disabled. So my mom, at a very young age, contracted polio. And so when she came to the States at 12 years old, she spent the first year in the States living in a hospital, having surgeries to straighten out her legs, and, like, getting braces and doing physical therapy to learn how to walk with braces.
Wow.
Right? So she didn't actually, like, walk independently until she was, like, 13. After all of these surgeries. So my mom was, like, a fighter.
Yeah.
The most amazing woman, like, I'll ever encounter in my life. So the thing to think about, like, she had to have a biopsy, right? So they knew the tumor was there. They still had to do a biopsy for it. So the plan was that I would take her to the hospital on Wednesday and check her in so that they could do this biopsy. Like, it was essentially, this diagnosis was a death diagnosis for my mom. To the extent that, for her to have open heart surgery, which is what removing that tumor would have required, would have rendered her unable to use her upper body, which was the only movement she had. Right? Like, it was the only movement she had. So she essentially would have been bedridden. And at her age, not knowing if she would have fully recovered from that. So we go in Wednesday, we stay at the hospital. She has an ultrasound, the next day. It's the most nervous I've ever seen my mom in her entire life. Completely restless, incredibly freaked out. 2 days later, Saturday morning, I called my sister and I said, "You need to come." And I was like, "Something doesn't feel right." Right? Like, this isn't her. She's such a fighter. I've never seen her give up, and she's given up. So my sister, was just like, "Okay, I'll be in. I got a flight. I'll be in tomorrow morning." So my sister had planned on coming in Sunday morning. Saturday afternoon, all my family came to see my mom and, check in on her at the hospital. Again, she had been completely anxious, and we reached this point where, all of a sudden, she was calm.
Wow.
And I had to go home and check on my dad, right? Because my dad couldn't be at the hospital. He was sick.
He was a red sick.
He was sick and then he was weak. He was tired, so he couldn't spend a whole day at the hospital with her. I had sent him home with friends. So I was like, I have to go check on him. I had to go check on him, make sure he was fed. And then also just for my sanity's sake, leave the hospital for a little while. So she was like,
"You're doing your MBA while all of this is happening."
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Good reminder. So I left her with a cousin and he ended up leaving. He was like, "Hey," left her resting. And I went out for coffee with friends, a couple blocks away from my apartment. And while I was out, I got the call from my dad that the hospital had called and my mom had crashed. And so, literally in the blink of an eye. So, 4 days, 4 days, not even, 4 days, 4 days span of, the diagnosis to my mom passing. I can reflect on it now and say, that was how it happens, because if it had been a buildup, I would have been broken.
Right.
Right? You sort of had to steal her away from me for me to be able to process. It was the Band-Aid.
Oh my gosh.
And I look at it and I'm like, you know what? It was a love story. My mom couldn't imagine her life without my dad.
Oh my God.
I know. But it's how I tell it. And it's how my sister and I came to peace with it. Was she couldn't imagine her life without this man.
She left. Yeah.
And she had an out. And she took her out. I believe very strongly in the will to live. And my mom made a decision, and I respect her for that decision.
Yeah.
And my dad, freaking being the trooper that he was, who was supposed to die in 3 to 6 months of a terminal diagnosis,
thank you,
held on until after I graduated.
Wow.
His health didn't take a turn for the worse until literally I graduated.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He knew all that you were going through.
Yeah. And I believe he held on for, again, the will. I believe both of them just, decided when they wanted to go.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
So, okay. Sorry.
It's amazing. So, your mom happens. She leaves. And then?
I got to finish grad school.
Yes.
And now there's, a serious, I felt like there was a clock, right? Because I didn't know when my dad's health would turn. Without my dad, I had no financial support.
Right?
I had
Did you ever think, I'm just going to drop school and just take care of my family?
No. I had committed to this thing, right? And this thing was the thing that was supposed to help me get financially stable. I was a year and a half into it. It still was about being financially stable, but this time the reality check of, I'm going to have to take care of myself. I have had this safety net my entire life. I need to finish this. Not to mention, mother taught me really well, and I was like, she's going to haunt me if I don't finish this thing.
Right, right.
Right? If she were here, she would tell me that is not a reason to not finish.
Oh, my God.
And if anything, I had to use it as motivation, and that's what I did. I used it as motivation, and, thank goodness for, wonderful friends who caught me up to speed. I missed 2 weeks of school. Which is a big deal when you're a full-time student.
Yeah.
Friends who got me up to speed and who, didn't ask to have me removed from their groups, right? In your MBA program, lots of group projects, and who, helped me get back into it. And then, so after that semester, and then the last semester, again, those same wonderful, amazing friends who included my now husband, who understood that if we did study groups, that we needed to do it at my house. Because I couldn't spend all of my time. Like, I could go to class, but I couldn't spend all of my time at school the way that I had every semester leading up to that one. So they would come to my home. So my dad knew my grad school cohort, like, really, really well, because they bent to me to help me get through it. So we got through it. I didn't have a job offer waiting, but to be honest, if I had one, I couldn't have taken it because my dad wanted home hospice care. And I was the only one who lived at home. And things that people don't tell you is he had what I would consider the best of insurance, right? He had a pension and insurance that came from having worked for his union for like 35 years. And then he had supplemental like insurance on top of that to cover. The home health aid help that we would have gotten covered accounted for 20 hours over the course of seven days a week.
Oh my gosh. So like
nothing.
Yeah.
So I used those 20 hours to be my 20 hours of, like, I can leave the house.
And go to class and go work.
And, yeah. Well, no, this is after I graduated.
Oh, okay.
So this was, like, 20 hours a week that I could go and, like, get out of the house and just, like, smell fresh air and, like, not necessarily think about being,
get out of your head, yeah.
Like, a nurse. Right? So I did that for several months, and then it was really clear, like, as my dad was getting to his last days, and I called my sister and I said, hey, it's time to come. And so she packed her stuff, and she came, and she stayed. She was with me for the last 2 weeks. So I my timing was about right. So she was with me for about the last 2 weeks of my dad's life. And we were both next to him when he passed away.
Really?
And we knew the day. You know, like, there's just, if you listen to your gut, if you listen to everything around you, that morning, we just sort of felt like, this is the day. And we called everyone in the family and we said, hey, if you want to say goodbye, we think today is the day. And everyone came by. And so he saw everyone that he could possibly see that day. And everyone got to say their goodbyes and, like, say their piece. And after everyone had left, like, he went to sleep and he didn't wake up.
Wow. Oh, my God.
And so it was November of 2009, so I was several months out of graduation. I hadn't been working all of that time. I had never really mourned my mom.
Right?
Because I couldn't.
Right.
And now my dad was gone too. And I had very little savings in the bank. And it was like, oh my God. Like, I can get through the next couple of months, but, like, life was slapping me in the face and saying, you have to figure this thing out. I was, again, you know, people looking out for me, people helping me to ask for help that I couldn't ask for myself. I needed a roommate. Because I needed to pay rent, and one of my former grad school friends moved in with me and paid the rent in full.
It's awesome.
Amazing, right? Like, angels when you need them.
For sure.
So was my angel when it came to me being able to keep my housing. And then I want to say, like, my sister helped me with my rent, like, the last, like, I think for the month of January, which was the first month that I couldn't pay for it on my own, and I hadn't had the roommate yet. And gave me, like, grocery money.
Yeah.
So thank goodness for that. I learned how to be really scrappy with food. I learned to go to events where I knew there would be free food, where I could eat and, like, not have to find food myself. I started blogging because I was just like, this social media thing, like, social media marketing, it's what I want to do. Like, I know this. And so I have to make sure when I finally get an interview that I have something to talk about. So I started blogging. And blogging was great because it was also cathartic. I didn't talk about my life, though. What I talked about was, like, New York City and, like, things to do in New York, because I needed something other than my life to talk about.
Right.
And so the blog was very much, like, my sanity and, like, an escape. An escape that didn't...
Because I've heard a lot of bloggers start a blog because they want to kind of journal.
Yeah. No. I did not want to talk about my life. I was like, I need to talk about something that is, like, rosy and colorful and, like, not what's going on right now. Honestly, if I had journaled, I probably would have attracted more readers. It would have been a better blog, but it wouldn't have served what I needed at that point, right? I didn't need to talk about it anymore. It was what I talked about 23 hours out of the day.
Yeah.
For 1 hour, let me talk about something that's not my life. So I did that, and I was on social media. So as low as I was, and I was like, I have to keep doing something to, like, keep me relevant and so that I know, like, how these channels are evolving. And so I did. Like, I was essentially, like, treated it like I was in school, but still trying to figure out what to do. So I had applied around that time. It was a census year. So it was the 2010 census. And there are always jobs with the census that start out really early because they start planning for it, like, 2 years out. I had applied for jobs, didn't get a call back. In the span of those 3 months, I took a job as, like, a social media assistant for this woman entrepreneur in New York. It was, the interview was like, I didn't have a good feeling about her as a person, but she offered me the job and I really needed a job. So I took the job, and it's the only time in my life I've ever quit a job, and I quit it after one day.
No way.
She was awful. But it was one of those where it's like, I can't compromise. I was being asked, in one day I was asked to do something that I was considered incredibly unethical. And I was like, I'm not going to compromise myself as a person. As desperate as I am right now for money and a job, I cannot compromise who I am as a person. And I'm so glad that I did. And the universe rewarding you. Totally. The universe rewarded me for holding on to my true self. And I kid you not, the next day, I got a call from the census.
Wow.
The next day.
Like, how many, that's an incredible lesson your life gave you. Oh. Right?
Like, yeah. If I had held on to that job, like, I might not have gotten that call.
Right.
I got that call the next day, and it was a call to go work one day, like, one event, and I was like, I'll take it, right? Like, you're going to pay me $100 for that day. I'm good. That's $100 that I didn't have. And I, and again, could have said no, but, like, who was I to turn? Right. I was like, I'm already, right, like, go.
And two master degrees.
Yes. Super educated. But I went and I worked that event that one day, and I met this guy who was like, hey, he was just like, you know, we have another event, can you work it? And I was like, yeah. I was like, whatever events you have, I will work. I was like, I can do whatever you need me to do. He was just like, how long have you been in the system? I was like, I applied months ago, and this is the first time I got called. And he gave me his card. He had been working for the census for several months. He said, you call me tomorrow, and I will have a full-time job for you.
Nice.
And he did.
See?
And I remember his name was George. George was my census, like, savior. So George got me the most amazing job at the census, which was doing LGBTQ outreach in New York City. So it was the first year that the census was asking a question about domestic partnership.
Wow.
And so it was the first time we would get a gauge of LGBTQ couples.
Right.
In the United States. That's a really, really big deal. Yeah. And I grew up in Chelsea in New York City, which is a very large, like, LGBTQ community. And they were issues that I was always, like, super passionate about, just because I've always had friends and family who identified as part of the community, and I've always identified as an ally. Like, my grandparent figure growing up was a drag queen. So, like, that's how much, like, it is part and parcel of, like, who I am to be an ally. And so I loved doing that work, right? Like, that's marketing. Totally. I was marketing the census. I was like, I can pitch this.
I mean, I think that's a great point, that you're taking every single thing that you're doing and just channeling it to what you want it to.
Everything is connected.
Totally.
Like, come on. You can find the spin on everything. You can find value in everything.
Your mindset.
You have to, right? And, like, I could have gone down that hole of, like, woe is me, like, nothing is working. And I was like, no, no, no. Like, it's going to work. Like, I have to make it work. And so I did, right? And so I kept doing my blogging. I was tweeting. Hey, the flexibility of my job in the census gave me opportunity to do that. I can do it all the time. And then I met people, right? Like, I used the census. I talked to everybody. And I met, there were lots of musicians and artists who worked at the census because it was a steady gig.
Right.
On, like, their music case.
Right.
And I had a supervisor who was a musician, brilliant guy. He had worked for the UN before.
Wow.
And retired from the UN and was now a folk musician.
Okay.
And he was working at the census. He was like, hey, talk to me about social media. And I did. And he was like, can you help me? And he paid me as a consultant to help him start his social channels.
Because you had started yours.
Yes. And then I met more people like him, and I met, like, small business owners through the census and through people like him. And for, like, I worked through the census until, like, I worked at the census until there wasn't any more census work. But during that time, I did enough, like, freelance stuff that I finally had, like, enough to be able to get a freelance gig at an agency.
Oh.
So it took me about a year. gotten worked, but I did it. And I finally got my foot in the door in an agency, and then one of those freelance jobs eventually became a full-time job offer.
Wow. To do what you wanted to do.
To do what I wanted to do. And I had to start from the bottom, right? Like, for perspective. 2 master's degrees, the whole previous career, 7 years in higher education. I was director of an office.
Right.
I was probably making around $42,000 when I left education, which is a good salary for education, not a good salary for New York City. The plan going into my MBA was that, yes, I would incur some debt, but like I would be making probably 90 at a minimum, right, in a marketing, like with an MBA. My first full-time job at an agency, I was making like low 50s.
Oh my gosh.
Right? So like
entry level. Is that considered as well?
Yes. Yeah. Because I also chose an area of marketing that was new.
At the time.
There weren't a whole bunch of social media agencies.
Yep.
Right? So this is 2010.
Yeah. It's when it started.
It was the start of it. There was no paid media.
At all.
You couldn't attach a picture.
Right.
Right? Like a tweet. Right. A tweet was just text. A Facebook post was just text. It wasn't limited. And that was the only distinction, but you couldn't attach a picture.
Right.
People forget that, like, video is still fairly new.
Totally, yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so, like, when you think about that, like, it made sense that the job was an entry-level job. And so it took a long time for me to finally sort of, like, level set and be where I thought I should be with my education and my previous experience.
Wow. So, oh my gosh. And then, go ahead.
So I was there for 3.5 years. I would say 2 years into it, I was like, all right, I've been here 2 years. I've shown you I'm not entry level. Like,
right.
I can do more, and I'm doing more, and I need to be compensated according for that.
And I think that's important, because I faced it too when I was in the corporate America world, that you have to talk to them, walk.
Yeah.
And before you start asking.
Yeah. Because I had no right to ask. I had no right to ask before that. Like, the reality was, we were still recovering from the recession. There were people who had years of marketing experience, and maybe they didn't have social experience. They had marketing experience, and they had connections, and, like, I couldn't compete with that. I knew that I had to, like, be humble, take the job, and I would be able to show them on the job what I was capable of. So 2 years in, I felt that I had done that. And I had advocates internally. And the politics everywhere, right? Like, that's just the world that we live in. It's a political beast, and you have to advocate. You have to lobby for yourself.
For yourself? That's right.
And so about 2 years in, I started having the conversations about, like, hey, if you want to keep me here, like, this is what I need. And they came close to that, so I stayed for about another year. And then about 6 months before I left, there was news that we were going to be merging with another company that was part of the holding company we were part of. We were a small agency, like, in New York. We had 2 offices, one in New York and one in L.A. I was in the New York office, and we were maybe 25 people. And what I loved about the company, like, despite the fact that I had to, like, fight for everything that I got, I love the culture. And I'm a big culture person. I will stay in a place for a long time. Like, I'll take less salary if it means I love who I work with.
Yes.
Right? Like, you're always going to have tough days at work. And the difference is, do you like the people that you have to share those tough times with?
Agreed.
So, like, people will keep me someplace. And that's what kept me at that place. I had what I would consider a family. But we all saw the writing on the wall. Like, the people that I was closest to, we saw the writing on the wall when we heard news of a merger. And I was like, you know what? Like, I don't have to leave this second, but it's time for me to start considering what happens after this. And so I did a job search that was, like, 6 months long. Interviewed at some places, not really finding places that were my fit. Eventually got a call from a recruiter at VaynerMedia, and I had a colleague who had literally, like, just left to go be a vice president there. And so he was like, hey, you know, your colleague just started here, like, would you be interested in coming in for an interview? And I was like, sure, I'll go in. I had heard of Vayner because this colleague went there, but I wasn't super familiar with Gary. Like, the things that I had heard about him were like, oh, he's like showboater, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, whatever. Like, you know, my experience working at agencies was like, it didn't matter who led the company. Like, that didn't affect your day to day. Wake up call later on, right? But so I met with the former colleague, and I was like, hey, you're inside. You know where I'm coming from. Like, give me your honest opinion. And he was like, this is what we wanted our other agency to be. Like, it's really happening here. And Gary is super involved in the day-to-day, and he invests in the things that he should invest in, right? Like, there's a full, like, creative team, and we didn't have that at our former agency, and the platforms were evolving such that, like, creative was becoming more and more important.
It's so crazy that a lot of people don't realize how important creative is.
Yes, but it's because it wasn't at the beginning, but now it's just, like, people expect quality video and quality photography in social media, just like they do what they see in magazines and what they see on TV, right? Like, it is high quality. It wasn't like that before. I used to shoot it on my phone for a client, right? And so I liked what he had to say, and so I went in for the interview, and I was really sold on one question. I asked the person who interviewed me had been there 3 years, right? And we were about to celebrate 5 as an agency, so it was a big deal that he had been there 3. And I said, what are you most proud of in terms of what you've accomplished here? And he said, the development I've seen in the people that I worked with.
Wow, right up your alley.
Right up my alley, right? Like, the educator will always be part of me, and I was like, yes, right? And he was like, it's not a business, you know, a new business pitch. It's not a piece of creative. It's the people.
That's awesome.
And I was like, you are my kind of person, right? And that this was the person they put in front of me meant, like, that's what the company valued, and that has held true every single day that I've been here. Like, it is very much about the people. And the fact that, like, we treat people really well, that Gary treats people really well, is what makes good creative the byproduct.
Totally. And so now, you do the marketing, and you do mentoring, too.
Yeah, so, like, I'm not assigned to any accounts day-to-day. So I'm now, in this new role, like, very removed. Like, there are very few clients that I'm like, oh, I'm part of, like, what we're doing for you on day-to-day. Like, my job is very much to help Gary, and so that means being present for, like, certain operational conversations, like, in keeping him up to speed in that. Like, he has interest in certain, like, projects and certain clients, and so it's, like, being present in the room and sort of being him when he can't be there. But mentorship is a huge part of that, right? Because when I say that VaynerMedia is very much about, like, the individual people and, like, finding happiness for those people, that means you have to have conversations with them.
Right.
Right. That means you truly have to understand them and their personal motivation. So, yeah, a lot of time goes into that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, you like, full circle.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So, I have to ask you, how is it working with Gary? Because we want to know.
It's awesome. He has a very uncanny ability to, like, read to the heart of your question. Right? So I've never seen someone maximize, like, 5 minutes the way this guy can maximize 5 minutes. He has an amazing heart.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, it's amazing that I have a boss who is incredibly busy all day long and will, like, text you.
By the minute.
By the minute. And will text you on your wedding day to say, big day, thinking of you.
Awesome.
Right? And then, like, I was exchanging text messages with him, saying, like, sending him selfies. On my wedding day, right? But it's because he is that invested. Like, he is family, and he treats everyone that way. And we're getting really big, and it's at the point now where, like, some people haven't necessarily, like, taken him up on the old offer of, like, hey, you can come and meet. But I guarantee, like, the people who do take the time to do it, like, will see to his heart. And, like, we'll see that he's completely honest about it. He is genuinely who he is, right? Like, there's no persona about it. Like, he genuinely cares. When he says, the thing that he cares about most is making sure that, like, when he passes away, that people have good things to say about him. Like, he truly means that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I also give him a shout-out because you're the only woman of color of 4 people that work under him, right?
Yes.
That's awesome.
I'm the only woman and the only woman of color. So hopefully we'll change that, and I think we will. So I won't be the only of either at some point. I think he's, for now, I guess, seeing tremendous value in what the 4 of us are doing. And so he's talked about, like, maybe expanding it and bringing more people into that kind of role, which I think would be great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so, okay, we're running out of time.
I know.
What's next for you? I mean, what you're doing right now.
It really caught up with me. I am in a happy place. And it's time for me to, like, set goals again. So I refer to this offer, like, to work with Gary in this capacity as the job I didn't know I wanted. He really caught me off guard. It wasn't, like, a position he was hiring for. It wasn't a division that existed. He created it. And I was part of, like, the first group to do this job. So, you know, like the plans were, I had just become a vice president like a few months beforehand. So the goal was to like settle into that job and like figured out what that meant. And now this is just like, wow, I'm involved in conversations around running the agency.
Yeah.
Not running a specific set of accounts at the agency, like the agency, like right. The whole thing. I knew that I would be in a role like this at some point, but if I'm going to be completely honest, I thought it was a few years down the line. Because I thought, like, I had made several jumps over the last few years.
Yeah.
That was just like, all right, there's got to be a lull. I think the lull is coming, and that's cool. I'm really happy here, and I can settle here. So now it's time for me to reset. Like, I see myself working for Gary in some capacity for a really long time. And that's because I value him as a person, and I value, like, how he treats his people. And so I'm going to be connected to that as long as I can be connected to that. I think right now the resetting of goals are personal, right? Like, what do I need to do for my own growth? And we've started talking about this a few months ago when we met at the conference, and it's that, like, I haven't really had time to just settle down and, like, tell my story. And I value telling stories because these stories provide people motivation and perspective on, like, hey, I can get through that too, right? Like, my struggle may not be exactly the same, but, like, people need to hear stories from people who look like them and whose stories resemble theirs. And so that's sort of like when I say resetting now, it's just like, okay, what are those personal goals? And so, yeah, I think I'm having time to think about it.
Well, you just had your wedding.
Yeah, it's like, there was a lot of stuff going on. I turned 40 this year, which is also like a big deal. So it's just like, let me get through all of these like life benchmarks. and then I can like, the focus will be like continuing doing what I'm doing. You know, we're having more conversations about diversity and inclusion at VaynerMedia, but also like I think about that in a broader sense, like in marketing.
Totally.
Right? Like it's an interesting industry in that like we still have siloed work for Latinos, and that doesn't make sense for me anymore.
Agreed.
Right? Like, I'm not, like, it just doesn't. You know, it's sad, but I don't watch Univision anymore. Like, on occasion, it's like, oh, cool, this is on, but I don't, like, seek it out.
Right.
I speak Spanish. Well, like,
especially with the Netflix and the Hulu.
Like, that's just not how we consume.
Right.
Right? And not only that, but it's like, I don't know. We need to figure it out. But the model that we have in place is not what's going to work. And I don't think that we're having enough conversations. I don't think we're having enough honest conversations about what this industry needs to look like. Right? Like, it's a crazy stat. Like, if you look at stats overall, I think, what is it, in the next 15 years, Latinos will be more than 50% of the population not in this country.
2020?
Yes.
Yes, it's going to be the largest minority.
Now, if you look at just millennials, I think the stat is over 70%.
Wow. I didn't know that one.
Yeah. I'll have to send it to you, but I'm pretty sure, like, that's what the stat is.
And those millennials definitely don't watch Univision.
No.
But they're still brown.
Right. So, really, we talk about, like, general market advertising, which is the nice way to say, like, predominantly white. And then we say Latino advertising, when in reality, like, general market advertising should be multicultural advertising.
Oh.
Right? So, like, we need to stop the silos and we need to have this conversation. So, when I say diversity inclusion at VaynerMedia, like, I don't just mean having more brown people at the agency. I mean, like, no, like, also how that impacts our work.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. 100%. So there's a lot of conversation.
You know what? We didn't have a break. A coffee break. But the coffee break was real. We are at Gabriela Cafe in Los Angeles, California, and I enjoyed a latte, and they actually put the Gazzetta Fan podcast logo on the coffee latte, and I'll post a picture. What did you have?
I had a chai. I had an almond milk chai, and it was delicious.
Okay, so to close out, because you have to, otherwise we can sit here and talk, and I think you have an incredible story. When you told me a few months ago, I'm like, you have to be on my show.
Thank
like,
you.
Have to. No question.
Thank you for being one of those voices to remind me that I have to tell it.
Oh my gosh. Like, we can go on and on, and we have so much. And what I love about you telling your story and how you tell it really is it's the how the lessons come through and how they come out, and it's just like,
oh my gosh. Perspective.
Correct. all
about yourself. Right, I guarantee you in those moments, it didn't really feel like a valuable lesson.
Agree 100%. And I say that, for example, when my mom moved me to Mexico. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time, I was like, oh, I hate my mom. But now it's perspective. Si no lo hubiera hecho, I wouldn't be where I am.
Yeah. You know, you wouldn't be who you are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the last two questions is, do you have a remedy that you want to share? Whether it's something for the soul, for the mind, for the body, food.
I'm the queen of remedios, like the things that I can't let go of any of them, and my husband looks at me like, that's not going to work. And I'm like, you have to try it. So beyond using Vicks for everything, which yeah. I'm sure you've heard several times, teas, right? I've always like struggled with stomach ailments, and so teas are always manzanilla. My good manzanilla for stomach ailments, but a good menta too. Like, menta being my go-to. Yeah, always, always, always in my pantry.
Nice. And do you have a quote or a mantra or something, words that you want to share?
The Serenity Prayer is always my go-to. Like, I chanted it like a mantra, like, during the really hard times.
Sure.
Right? So, and when I say God, you don't have to take it as a religious thing. For me, it's like, it's God, it's the universe, it's... Right, like I was raised Roman Catholic, but like I consider myself a spiritual person, not a religious person, and I believe we all have different names for whatever the greater entity is, and so it's like asking that greater entity to like help me have clarity, right, to help me accept the things that I can't change, and to like overcome the things that I can, and so that's the constant reminder. Yeah,
totally. Thank you so much. You're awesome.
No, you are too.
Thank you. And I have to let you know.
Sorry.
So where can people find you? Your social media?
Twitter and Instagram, Latina_Sweetie on both. I think Latina_Sweetie yeah. or just Latina_Sweetie on Snapchat. I should know that, but it's one of those two. Yeah.
Mary will be mad at you.
I know. You're totally mad.
So Latina_Sweetie, and I'll have it on the show notes.
Amazing. Thank you, Pam.
Thank you. Do you blog anymore?
I haven't updated it in a while. I gotta get back on it.
So we'll keep it to the tweets.
Yeah.
IG. Okay. Thank you very much.
Gracias.
So, listeners, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, leave a review. For the non-iTunes users, you can find the show also on Stitcher, SoundCloud, Player, Pam, Blueberry, all the other podcast platforms. Let me know what you think about this episode and share it with someone who will find it useful. I think Maribel has an incredible story and it's definitely worth sharing. Like Café con Pan Podcast on Facebook, follow on Instagram at Café con Pan Podcast, join the Super Pan Podcast Facebook group, and now you can support me on patreon.com/Café con Pan Podcast. Visit spreadideaswithpeople.com/podcast/38 for the show notes. And thank you, Henry, for the music. If you want to check him out, go to soundcloud.com/Henry-Castro-. And listeners, stay shining.
Find all your favorite movies and shows faster with Xfinity. Just speak into the X1 voice remote to search across live TV, on demand, even Netflix and Prime Video. Now that's simple, easy, awesome. Switch to Xfinity today and get a great offer. You'll enjoy Xfinity X1, which gives you access to your favorite streaming apps like Netflix, YouTube, and now Prime Video. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today to learn more. Restrictions apply.